This is Bob Soucy. The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon. As a runner myself representing the Flutie Foundation at the 2022 Boston Marathon, I'm proud to have been a teammate to many amazing Adaptive Program runners, achieving their dreams at the greatest race in the world. The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Well, I tend to think of the gospeling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position, not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Good wet Saturday morning to you. It's Hardy here on the Sports Hub Golf Club where, first of all, I feel some vindication this morning. Right off the bat, I want to say good morning to Mike O'Brien, who's in on headlines here. Kristen Sermon, our producer this morning. Kristen, who is not a movie buff, a self-described not big carer of movies, told me moments ago she finally saw Goodfellas for the first time. This is and Kristen, feel free to step in and correct me if I get any of this wrong. Okay, you finally saw Goodfellas, and just out of the blue, before we even spoke about the movie for 1 minute, you told me, "Oh, and the thing about Spider's death."
Yeah, I don't even know his name, but I told you the one who egged him on. What's his name?
Jimmy.
So yeah, it's Jimmy's fault.
Right, that's the argument I've been making for years. Who is responsible? Who is responsible for Spider's death? Yes, we know Tommy pulled the trigger. Yes, we know Spider told Tommy to go F himself. Yes, we know all this. Jimmy. Jimmy is really the one. Had Jimmy just kept his mouth shut instead of saying, "Hey, kid, good for you. You know, don't take that off nobody. What's the world coming to? You got to let him get away with that. Bah, 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 bah." Jimmy. Jimmy is responsible for Spider's
100%.
Death. 100%. Okay. Not guilty, but responsible. Okay. All right. So now that we got that out of the way, let's move on to this really soggy date. I just want to open up the show and talk about the fact that if you're going out to play today, make sure you call ahead. You know, I've already seen some notices this morning from the likes of our friends over at Brookline Golf Course. I know Tom Ellis sent out, or one of his staff sent out something this morning in terms of what their conditions are like. In fact, what did that say? Today's course conditions, due to the recent rainfall we received, today's play will be delayed. Okay, so there you go. There's one right off the bat. And if you follow any of these, golf courses or supers online, I know Russell Heller over at Franklin Park is very active on social media. You'll get a good sense of what's going on at these golf courses today, and you may not even have to call first. But just be aware, heading out, I played my first holes of the year, and I wouldn't even necessarily call it. It wasn't a round. It wasn't anything close to a round. It was just that I got out for a few holes on Wednesday of this week. You remember the rain that we had earlier this week? Well, it was biblical in proportion. So I thought after, you know, maybe a day and a half or so, it had been enough to, I guess, let it dry out a bit. It had not, and even though I was only out there for a few holes, it was to the point where it's like, okay, it's just as well that we didn't get even a full nine, much less 18 in today because of the conditions. I would go play today in a second. Just make sure that where you're going to play and what you're planning on. My next-door neighbor's got a standing tee time at Brook Meadow over in Canton on the Sharon line there. I didn't see him leaving this morning, so just double check before you head out. That's all I'm saying. All right, there's your public service announcement on course conditions. And by the way, to that end, if you're listening right now, you're at a golf course, you're a super, you're in the pro shop, you guys are wide open, carts everywhere, come on out. Everything's fine. We got the best drainage this side of the Sahara Desert. By all means, call me up or text or whatever. Text. What are you going to text me? How about on Twitter? Let's do Twitter. @Hardy985. Let me know. And at the end of the show, I'll do an update on local course conditions for the day. Yeah, let me know on Twitter. @Hardy985. All right, moving on. Big story in golf is still Tiger. Like it or not, it's the biggest story to happen to golf. Recent memory, it's going to be the biggest story going forward. And a lot of it has to do, I feel, with the PGA calendar and the change in the PGA calendar this year. I'll explain, and I think you already know where I'm going with this. Due to the moving of the PGA Championship from August to May, we no longer have this long period of the doldrums between the Masters and really in between major championships, which would be in between the Masters and the U.S. Open. Now, it does take one big event out of play, and that would be the TPC that got moved up to March, but I mean, that's okay. It served as like a really nice big warm-up to the Masters. So here's what's going on. And I'll you know, put it in context of what we used to think about these things and now what we think about them here in 2019 under this new professional golf calendar. Masters obviously finished up a couple of weeks ago. Last week, and it's always been a nice tournament to have right after the Masters, the RBC Heritage at Harbortown. And, you know, that's the one I think of as that's the Lighthouse Tournament, okay? Which really had an impressive field for being the week after a major. I was impressed with that. CT Pan ended up winning it, which probably is great for CT Pan. It's great for, you know, golfers, you know, on the rise and say, okay, a new guy can still go out there and win one. Probably not the thing that maybe, dare I say, organizers and networks would have wished for coming off of that huge Tiger bump that they received at the Masters, but so be it. This weekend, it's the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. This is the teams of golfers and the walk-up music tournament. It's really, I mean, if you're talking about what these tournaments are known for, they play the walk-up music. All right, it's fun. Good times. Not necessarily a big grabber in terms of attention or ratings, but, you know, they're doing their thing, and that's pretty much been what they've been known for. By the way, the leaderboard at the Zurich Classic right now, it's in teams, so it's difficult to take a look, but the team of Malnati and Hurley the Third are at 14 under. Knox and Stewart and a bunch of other guys are tied at 13 under, but there are also individual scores listed for it. This is one of the problems with this tournament. Difficult to see who's winning. Difficult to know what to root for. Neither here nor there. It's a fun tournament. It's in New Orleans. They play the walk-up music great. Now, moving on with the schedule, the Wells Fargo Championship, which used to be known as, for the last several years anyway, it's known as the tournament Will Tiger Play? Because he's had a relationship with that tournament, and he is, I guess, surprise people by either playing or not playing in it in years past. Turns out this year, Tiger will be skipping next week's Wells Fargo Championship. All right. Again, like I said, he's had a relationship with this tournament before at Quail Hollow. He's decided not to play it. And it's probably got a lot to do with the fact that the PGA Championship is coming up, not the following week, but the week after. The week in between the Wells Fargo and the PGA Championship, which, as you know, or maybe you don't know, maybe it's the first year here, the PGA Championship, no longer in August, it's in May. And it's a big one this year. It's at Bethpage Black in New York. I mean, really a storied golf course for everything that they've done with it and hosted U.S. Opens there now. And I mean, it's cool, right? But it's going to be happening in the middle of May. In between the Wells Fargo and the PGA Championship, a tournament that used to get a nice field and a decent amount of juice, the AT&T Byron Nelson in Dallas. I don't know how that tournament's going to do this year, as a lot of guys like to take that week off before a major championship to tune up their game, get to the course early, do whatever it is that they think they can do to get their game in better shape to win a major championship. So whether or not that affects the AT&T, we'll find out starting on May 9th, but that's what we've got for the next few weeks. The Zurich Classic New Orleans going on the rest of this weekend. you know, teams of two. Wells Fargo next week, AT&T, Byron Nelson in Dallas, and then the PGA Championship at Bethpage, May 16th through the 19th. After that, of course, we'll be talking U.S. Open and British Open and all that for the rest of the season. But it's going to be different. I mean, this year's golf calendar is going to look different. It's going to feel different. It's going to, just as a fan watching it, you know, at home on your couch, it's going to have a different feel to it throughout the season. Something else that has a different feel right now is the fact that golf is rubbing their hands together and laughing maniacally because they think there's going to be a huge financial spike thanks to Tiger Woods winning the Masters. And I'm not saying there won't be. I think you're going to see some legitimate ticks upward in certain areas of golf. Maybe just not the ones that they're thinking about. For instance, you know, they use these data points to determine how effective a golfer's performance has been. There's television ratings, which are probably the easiest one to look at. And looking at this year's final round at the Masters, you know, viewership was up 40% over last year from when Patrick Reed won. Okay, well, that makes sense. But they're also combining the actual viewing and the replay because it started so early on the West Coast. They also look at social media. Masters tweets out a video of the final putt from the champion each year. And by the way, this is put together by Tom Van Herren from ESPN, who did a nice breakdown of all the financials and the numbers, trying to break down what Tiger's victory means to golf. The Masters tweets out a video of the final putt. Reed's winning putt from 2018 has been viewed to date 393,000 times. Okay. Patrick Reed, winning putt at the Masters, 393,000 times. Same video of Tiger Woods from this year is winning putt, and both of them were anticlimactic winning putt. I'll tell you how anticlimactic Patrick Reed's putt was. I don't even remember. I don't remember what he was putting for. I don't remember how much of a lead he had. I don't think it was oh my God, he made that putt to win. Maybe he did, which makes this number even worse, the fact that it was viewed less than 400,000 times. Because Tiger's putt, completely anticlimactic. You know, he had a one-footer for bogey to win the Masters. As of Monday morning of this past week, that video has been viewed nearly 8 million times, as opposed to the 400,000 from Patrick Reed for last year. So there you go. There's the social effect, the social media effect. This is where it gets a little harder to quantify, because Bridgestone saw this as, you know, the floodgates opening for their golf ball, the Tour BXS golf ball, and, you know, one of Tiger's new partners, essentially. You know, after Tiger went through all the stuff that he went through with the women and with the under the influence and all this stuff, and he, you know, was in, you know, branding hell. You know, there were people that wanted nothing to do with Tiger. He had to get away from some stuff. Nike not doing golf equipment anymore, so he's got to get new clubs. He's got to, you know, new golf ball. He might as well do different stuff. So Bridgestone admits they don't know whether it's exposure in the Masters. This is quoting from Tom's article again. With Woods will translate to long-term sales, but it is anticipating increases based on the consumer interest displayed already. Bridgestone makes a hell of a golf ball. I've played Bridgestone balls before. For a player like me, it's as much about what looks right, what feels right. I've been playing Callaways for, I don't know, the last several seasons. I really like the Callaways. I think you have to be a pretty significantly better golfer than I am to truly appreciate and discern the difference in a golf ball in anything other than just pure, unadulterated distance and maybe a little bit of feel around the green. To me, it's much about, you know, the gloss on the golf ball and, you know, what it looks like and the dimple pattern and all that stuff. I mean, it's, you know, it's a confidence issue. So for people, and for the people at Bridgestone to think that there's going to be a significant increase in sales based on Tiger winning the Masters in the Bridgestone golf ball, yeah, maybe. You know what do more than anything? Price point. If Titleists are going for 40 or 45 bucks a dozen, and Callaway's in there at 35 or 40 bucks a dozen, Bridgestone If you want to sell a bunch more golf balls than anybody else, yes, it helps that Tiger win the Masters. You know what else? Sell yours for $30 a dozen. I don't know if they can. I don't know if the price point makes sense. I don't know if it's something they would ever consider. But that's, I mean, I hate to break it to you, and I don't. But I don't think I'm letting any cat out of the bag and telling any secrets that people don't know in the golfing industry. A lot of it comes down to price point. Go to the Golf Expo. Go to the Golf Expo in Boston in March every year. You know one of the most popular booths is? The reclaimed golf balls. The guys that go into ponds and go into streams and they go into golf courses or they find them in the woods. They clean them up. They put them through a process. They repackage them. They bag them up. They sell the used golf balls for a fraction of what they cost brand new. People can't get enough of them. They walk out of there with 5-6 dozen bags of golf balls or 5-6 dozen golf balls all bagged up. How often do you see somebody walking out of a pro shop with 5 or 6 dozen brand new Titleist Pro V1s? It's not too many people going in and dropping $250 at a time on golf balls. So that's what it has to do with more than anything else. Now there are the golf clubs. And again, I think Nike certainly saw a huge spike in their sales when Tiger started coming onto the scene. For right now, I think Tiger's playing TaylorMade. They said they sold more of those irons in the first 7 hours following Tiger's win than the first 7 days following its pre-sale launch on April 8th. I'm not blown away by that. You had 7 days of a pre-sale launch, and you sold more in the hours after. I don't know. How many did you sell? What are the numbers that we're talking about? They won't say. And quite frankly, you want to play the same clubs that Tiger Woods plays? You can't. You can't. And I don't mean that in, oh, they're not available to you. I mean it in, you probably couldn't hit the golf clubs or swing them successfully, the same ones that Tiger has, the way he sets them up, with the stiff shafts and the, you know, whatever, whether he's 2 degrees upright or down or whatever. And especially if he's playing some kind of a tailor-made blade, keep that thing the hell out of my bag. I want nothing to do with it. Give me a nice, forgiving game improvement iron, and I'm all set with that. But people still think, hey, it's what Tiger hits. I might as well hit that myself. There's also, very briefly here, the notion of the mock turtleneck that Tiger was wearing. Nike, by the way, knows this full well. They said that for that mock turtleneck, they said there is a huge affinity for that shirt, and there is also a low-grade hatred of that shirt. that wasn't from Nike. That was Eric Wright, president and executive director of research at Joyce Julius. Okay, so, but they know that mock turtleneck may not see a huge spike in sales because there are a fair number of people out there that just hate it and wouldn't wear it if you paid them. You can count me in that group, not wearing a mock turtleneck on the golf course, unless it's to keep me warm. And I don't think he was doing it for warmth purposes. All right, so the Tiger spike continues. It's certainly going to spike interest in the PGA Championship moving forward as we get closer and closer to that in the middle of May. All right, coming up next here this morning on the show, I had a chance recently to speak with Rick Riley, who... Look, if you've listened to this radio station, you know he gets a fair amount of grief. Tutcher and Rich have done some very funny bits with him in the past. You know, they sent Dolfo out to an open mic at a comedy club to just read Rick Riley tweets to see what kind of reaction they got. And put it this way, people did not laugh. Okay, fine. But Rick Riley has written a book that I found to be... probably the most entertaining golf book I've read, going all the way back to another guy, much maligned figure on this radio station, John Feinstein. John Feinstein, for whatever you may have thought of his sports minutes when we used to play those, has written some amazing golf books. You know, he wrote the one about Tiger at the Open at Bethpage Black, and he wrote A Good Walk Spoiled, which is the first real comprehensive look inside the PGA Tour, at least that I ever read, and it's fantastic. This book that Rick Riley wrote is phenomenal. It's called Commander in Cheat, and it is about President Donald Trump and the way he behaves on the golf course. You can only guess what it's about, but you'll find out when you hear my conversation with Rick Riley coming up next here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Joining us now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, a man who is an expert in sports, in golf, and in cheating in golf because he wrote a book about Donald Trump. His name is Rick Riley.
I thought you were saying I'm an expert on cheating. I guess I have become an expert. I hope not because I'm cheating, because I don't. What I thought was going to be a article for Sports Illustrated or The Athletic turned into an entire book.
Well, Rick, I got to say that, you know, initially when I was reading this, to borrow from a Seinfeld episode where his dentist starts telling Jewish jokes after he's converted, you know, you know where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
Someone asked Seinfeld if this offends him as a Jew, and he said, no, it offends me as a comedian. This, you know, I started reading your book, I'm like, oh, I'm not offended as a voter. This offends me as a golfer.
Yeah, it's not, I don't know about politics, but I know about golf and played it my whole life. My whole family plays it. I have a 91-year-old aunt who still wins her flight. I mean, we have a family tournament. And then nobody does what Trump does, which is to say, calls in and says he won it from another state. He says he's won 20 club championships, but some of those weren't even, he wasn't even in the same state.
Rick,
one time he wasn't even in the country, he was in Singapore.
There's so much to get to. So first things first, the name of the book is Commander in Cheat, How Golf Explains Trump. Let's just start with a handicap, because this is the only one that I had heard about Donald Trump when it came to playing golf before he was president or anything else. What does the president say his handicap is?
He says he's a 2.8. But if you ever go to gin.com and look up a guy's handicap to see if he's what you're going to play?
Sure.
So you go to gin.com and type in Donald Trump, Florida, and up comes his handicap, and it's 2.8. And as soon as I saw it, I'm like, wait a minute. I played with this guy. You know, he's not bad. He's maybe a 9, a 10.
Yeah.
Pretty good player.
Really good. Like, a 9 or a 10 is really good.
Yeah, of course. I think only 3% of people over 70 are single digits. So that's fantastic. But then you see 2.8 and you're like, what? Then I see, you know, to get your handicap, you use your latest 20 scores. Well, do you realize his last 20 scores took him 8 years to post?
Wait a second.
Like, he posted once, in 2017 twice, in 2016 once. Now, last year we know he played 66 times. So he's the worst kind of guy. Like at my club, if you finish your round, and nobody go and you don't post your score,
mm-hmm.
and say it's low,
mm-hmm.
guys will go in and post you a 69 on you.
Right.
You have to post your score.
Yes.
Because we don't cheat each other.
No.
But here's a guy, he's taking 8 years. And then you know about slope, right? So there's rating and
sure.
there's slope.
Of course.
I think there's only like 10 courses in America, even from the back tees, are over 142 slope. All his slopes are 142, 144. Like, you're just screwing with the slope to make your handicap lower, you cheater.
Okay, so that's number one, reverse sandbagger. All right, we'll just call it that.
Cocktail party handicap.
Exactly, yeah, you're just trying to impress people with your handicap. Okay, that's number one. If memory serves, you kind of start off the book talking about his 18 club championships. Is that how many he claims to have?
Well, at the time I was writing the book, it was 18. Now it's up to 20.
Okay, and but, how many were you able to document? I know the answer, but this is great.
Well, of the 18, I could document none. 16 I know to be lies, and 2 I couldn't quite get confirmed. So let me tell you some of the ways he arrives at 18 club championships.
Yes.
And mind you, these are his words. This is what got me off my couch, because I'm not a political guy, but I'm a golf guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he said, I beat the best guys at my clubs, and that's without strokes. I'm really good, and that's why you should vote for me, because I'm a winner. And I'm like, well, no, because you told me one day how you did it, which is anytime you open a new golf course, and he has 15, you play the first round by yourself and declare that the club championship. So beating yourself still wins you the title. That's wrong.
Yes, yes.
And then I heard a story about him winning at playing at Trump Philadelphia the day they played the club championship one day at Trump Bedminster, and that's 87 miles away. And he called in and said, hey, I played really good today. Make me the club champion. They're like, what? No, Joe Schmo won with 74 or whatever. No, I shot 72 up here. And so they took down poor Joe Schmo and put up Donald J. Trump.
And then it turns out the caddy said he had a nice shot 82. What's he talking about? So there's that. Then a bunch of them, and maybe only your audience will understand this, were not club championships. They were seniors club championships or super seniors. And sometimes at some clubs, that's 70 and over. And even those, I couldn't get anybody to say it was legit. They're all like, yeah, but he wasn't putting out and stuff like that. So you're like, this is all faker than a big vat of cheese whiz.
Yeah. You take that and you take the handicap thing and you could say, all right, these are victimless cheating crimes in golf. The ones that stuck out to me, Rick, and it's Rick Riley here, Commander and Cheat is his new book about Donald Trump and golf. The ones that stick out to me, there are two stories. There's one about an actual club championship where he's playing a 15-year-old and Mike Tirico. Could you kind of like sum up those two stories? Because these are the ones that really bothered me.
So, you know, he only plays at his own courses now. And that's it. He doesn't play any public courses. He doesn't play Wingfoot where he's a member. And when I called guys at Wingfoot, they said he can't get a game here anymore because he cheats too much. The guys got sick of it. And in fact, that's where he got the nickname Pele because he kicks the ball so much. So I started trying to find people that had actually played against him in tournaments at Wingfoot. And I found a 15-year-old guy. I think his name was Levin, Zach Levin or something. And the 15-year-old was down four with five holes to play. And he was really miffed at Trump because he called, you know, ticky-tack like he was in the hazard. And as he took the club back, it might have brushed a tree or something. Brushed a grass. And he said, no, you touched the club in the hazard, you lose the hole. And another time, he was just off the green and he fixed a ball mark on the green, which of course is illegal, but pretty tic-tac.
Right.
So he lost that hole. And he said, this guy Trump was just being a jerk to my parents and everybody. And then with five to go, he's down four, and Trump goes, well, the kid put up a good fight, didn't he? Good fight. And this 15-year-old's like, screw you.
Right.
And he proceeded to win four of the next five. They go to extra holes. He wins on the second hole. And he said, Trump didn't even shake his hand. And he said, so from that day forward, I knew that he was not a man of honor. This game is about honor and etiquette and integrity.
Right.
He'd rather lose every round than cheat. Okay. So it's not so, you say victimless crimes. I don't, because people got robbed of club championships. They won and suddenly their name isn't on the wall anymore. But okay. But here's what he does. Sometimes he takes your ball and steps on it, throws it, kicks it in the bunker. And so Mike Tirico was playing at Trump Philly with John Gruden and Josh Jaworski. And it's Tirico and Jaworski against Trump and Gruden. It's a blind par five up the hill. Tirico hits the shot of his life. He's going to have a putted eagle. They can't believe it. He flies up to the green. He's so happy. But anytime you play with Trump, he's always 200 yards ahead of you.
Because he's driving the car that's twice as fast as everyone else's. Yeah,
he messes. He has a guy that messes with the governor.
Right.
He can go 50 while your car goes 20. But anyway, by the time Tirico gets there, it's not on the green. It's not near the pin. It's in the bunker 50 feet left. And Tirico checks the mark. Is that my ball? It is my ball. I'm like, how the hell? And the caddy's like, what the hell? Did it hit a bird? They couldn't believe it. And of course, as you figure, he might. So he leaves in the bunker, chops it out, three jerks, it makes a seven, loses the $20 to Trump. Fine. Trump buys cheeseburgers and everybody's fine with it. But in the parking lot, he finds out Trump kicked it in the bunker.
To me, this is, look, if I'm going to go play with him right now, if he's a legit 9 or 10, I'm not going to beat him straight up. And the only successes I'm going to get on the course that day, or when I'm like Mike Tirico and I hit a career 3-wood and have a legitimate eagle putt, if I were to find out later that he took that ball and threw it in the bunker.
But he didn't find out until after the round.
Right.
But see, you have one fallacy there. He doesn't play. He doesn't tell people he's a 9. He's never said he's a 9. He says he's one of the best players among all the rich people. Now, that would include Scott McNeely from Sun, who's a scratch and whose son is probably going to be on the PGA Tour. So no freaking way is he the best among the rich people. But he still says he's a 3. So now he has to not only cheat to win, he's got to cover those 7 shots. You know, everybody I talked to, they said the same thing. Oh, it was really fun. You know, he took mulligans. He didn't putt out. You could tell his caddies threw it out, but it was fun. I mean, one time in L.A., he was playing a money game, hits it in the water, takes the super cart. He's always first. He never plays honors. He's just first guy every time.
Yeah, he first off
the
tee every time.
They get up to the pond with the ball. They saw the big splash ripples right in the middle of the pond. It's on the fairway. And they go like, Donald, what the hell? And Trump goes, I guess it was the tide. I don't know.
The tide in the pond.
The tide.
I tell you, that was the one thing that was kind of disheartening to me reading this book. And it's Rick Riley here, Commander in Cheat is the name of his new book. So many of these guys had that same reaction. They're like, yeah, he cheats and he's rude and he lies about himself and he lies about me. You know, Lee Trevino saying that, you know, he was lying about my score to people in the clubhouse. Now he's embarrassed by it. But then they come away saying, oh, it's fun. It's great fun.
When we knew him in sports, which we knew him for 30 years, it was fun. But now it kind of matters because, you know, Arnold Palmer always said he never got into a business deal unless he played golf with the guy first. He said, you know, if you're going to cheat me on the course, you're going to cheat me in business.
Right.
Or you're going to cheat on your wife or, you know, or you're going to lose your temper out here. You're going to lose your temper in the meeting. I don't want that guy around. So people can say, ah, it's just golf. But we all know that golf is a window into the soul, how you behave. Do you cheat your friends when it's really easy to cheat in golf? That's the point. That's the point, man. If you're 200 yards away from me, you got to trust that I'm not foozling the ball. And I got to trust that you're not. And we're going to play fair and we're going to have a beer and shake hands afterwards. But if he cheats at golf, what else is he cheating at? Well, I'll give you some examples. He said, there's no such thing as climate change. Except at Doonbeg, one of his courses in Ireland, he is suing right now to put up a 2,000-foot seawall that's 10 feet high because, quote, climate change, unquote, is causing, quote, rising sea levels, unquote, that's ruining the golf course. So, I mean, are you gonna lie to us about climate change or are you lying to them? Which is it?
I know we're short on time here, so I want to ask you one more question, Rick. Tiger Woods, of course, just won the Masters. He's had a relationship with Donald Trump over the years, as have a lot of guys that we know about around here. Tom Brady, Bill Belichick. You write about Mike Ruzzioni in the book, and he's a Boston guy.
And Brad Faxon.
And Brad Faxon, exactly. So. Tiger now, I guess, is going to get the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Donald Trump. Does he maintain a relationship with Donald right now? Well, what do you know about that?
Well, he does. He does, and he's played with him twice now, I think. And anytime someone criticizes him for playing with the president, because here's the reason it's hypocritical. The Tiger Woods Foundation is this terrific foundation that he's really involved in. And they teach underprivileged kids the joys of golf, the etiquette of it, get them out there outside, meet a whole different kind of person, perhaps, that helps them maybe later in education. So that's cool, right? But Trump has said three times publicly now, including in Golf Digest, that golf should be aspirational. He says, that, I mean by that, you want to play golf, you aspire to play golf, so you do well in business, you join a country club, and that's how you get to play golf. All this other stuff is bad for golf. And the Golf Digest guy's like, what? Are you serious? Yeah, I know it's controversial, but I think that's how it should be. So in other words, Donald Trump doesn't think poor people deserve golf. Tiger Woods obviously does. The first tee does. Arnold Palmer thought so. So how can he take the Medal of Freedom from a guy who doesn't stand for anything Tiger believes? Furthermore, Trump cheated Tiger in a round with Dustin Johnson and Faxon in which he hit two balls into the water, dropped, hit it on. He's putting for seven in a bet against Tiger, and Tiger's in for birdie three, and Trump gets a shot on the hole. So Tiger says, what are you putting for, Mr. President? This is after two balls in the water, and he says, four. So how can you respect a guy that tried to cheat you?
Well, Rick, again, it comes back to how we started this thing. It doesn't offend me as a voter. It offends me as a golfer. But it's,
as somebody said, it's both a knee slapper and a head slapper.
It is.
Because 1 minute you're laughing, and the next minute you're like, oh, my God, how could this guy think he can get away with that? But you know what? He has gotten away with it. And he's your president golfer, and Like, he's, to me, he's putting a big orange splotch on golf that really hurts the game. I wish he would stop.
Commander in Cheat is the name of the book. Rick Riley has written a really good one. Great stuff, Rick. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks kindly.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Well, this is an unfortunate song to rejoin with here. Sunshine Highway. There are no. I don't see any sunshine out there right now. I don't know what the weather is supposed to be today. I think it's supposed to clear up. But just from my own experience out walking around, checking the turf this morning, so to speak, still very wet. Very wet a couple of days ago when things had a day or two to dry out when I got out for the first few holes of the year, which, by the way, happened to be at the Cape Club of Sharon, a club that I joined this year. Never joined a club before in my life. I've worked at them. I've played at tons of them. But when finally decided it was time to join a golf club this year, it was the Cape Club of Sharon for a variety of reasons, which we'll be getting into later on in the season. But it felt great just to get out there again and play a few holes. But like everywhere else, we're going to be dealing with some damp conditions for a while. Now, I asked at the beginning of the show if anybody was like totally open today, you know, but wide open, come on out, no restrictions at all. I did hear from James Small III, superintendent at Old Scotland Links in Bridgewater. He said they're open with carts. They drain real well. But I think it's cart path only there. I'll have to go back and double check from what James said. So listen, I think most places are going to be open. As I mentioned earlier today, I saw the email blast from the Brookline Golf Course that they were going to be on a delay this morning. A lot of courses are either going to be delayed or they're going to be cart path only. Some places may not have carts today. Whatever. Go out and walk, for crying out loud. Just don't let it stop you from playing altogether. Thank you to Rick Riley for joining us here a few minutes ago. Someone had asked me recently, like, you know, what golf book would you recommend? And honestly, like, instructionally, you got to be so careful. You got to be so careful with that stuff. The only way I can definitively say that you're going to get better at the game is A, through practice, and B, with a hands-on teaching professional. Some of the stuff that I got from the guys at Core Golf in Natick last year, in terms of just short game lessons, Dan Boisvert gave me a great short game lesson out there over the course of it. I mean, we spent 1 hour doing nothing but, and it sounds boring if you don't play and if you don't care anything about it, but if you want to get better and you really want to improve your short game, Dan and I spent an hour just working on setup position for chipping and pitching. An hour. And I don't mean hitting a flop, hitting a bump and run. Literally just working on the position of the hands and the club head and the stance for chipping and pitching around the green. And that type of instruction that you can get from a PGA professional, that you're not going to approach the level of impact on your game in a book. So as we talked with Rick Riley a little while ago, and his book about President Trump, Commander in Cheat, which is a really funny book, and I have friends who are like hardcore Trump supporters, and I was telling them about this book and we're laughing about it. They wanted to read it too. It is not as partisan as you might think in terms of reading it. Look, no one's mind is going to be changed one way or the other about this book, so don't worry about that. Don't worry about it offending you as anything more than a golfer. I think it's very enjoyable regardless of how you feel about it politically. But in terms of other golf books, what golf books I recommend, there's only one. In terms of an instructional book that I could say most people seem to find something in and won't screw your game up. That's all you're trying to do. It's almost like, you know, the Hippocratic Oath where, you know, first do no harm. I don't think you're going to be harmed if you look at Ben Hogan's Five Lessons. And that's a book that was recommended to me, 30 years ago, that I probably have a copy right now on my bookshelf that's at least that I bought myself 30 years ago. That's one that most professionals will agree is not going to screw you up in any way. Ben Hogan's Five Lessons. A lot of people like Golf My Way by Jack Nicklaus. You know, Tiger wrote at least one golf instructional book. The only other ones that I can say from my own experience that I've read that I think are not detrimental in any way in terms of mechanics are the mind games, where it's either Zen Golf or Dr. Joseph Parent wrote a book called Make Every Putt, and that's really more about fine-tuning your putting stroke to where you don't even care if the ball goes in the hole. You're just worried about making your putt. I mean, again, it's mind-numbingly boring for people who don't play the game, but if you want to get better at this stuff, I would say be very careful. If you're looking for a golf book and an instructional book, be careful of the ones that deal with mechanics. You're probably better off focusing on like mental stuff, or just read a golf book that is going to be enjoyable to you. Harvey Penick's A Little Red Book. There's instructional stuff in there, but it's so folksy and charming, and it's Harvey Penick. You're not going to not enjoy Harvey Penick's Little Red Book. Same goes for anything that Dan Jenkins wrote or John Feinstein. Go back and read the first John Feinstein book, A Good Walk Spoiled. You're going to love it. It's fantastic, even though it was written about life on tour more than 20 years ago, probably closer to 30 now. Once again, I want to thank Rick Riley for joining us on the show today and his book, Commander in Chief. Very good. And thank you to Ryan Johnston, who is lurking about, ready to take over to talk about all the stuff that happened in the draft last night and what you can expect today. I'm sure there'll be a lot of draft talk early on, and then a lot of hockey talk later on as the hockey show begins. And we got game two between the Bruins and Blue Jackets coming up tonight here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.